interests. But under the proposed plan, the question is moot. It doesn't make any difference whether Arafat can be trusted or not. The plan would, no doubt, be approved by an overwhelming majority of the United Nations for the following reasons. L. It would be a final implementation of the partition resolution passed in 1947 calling for the creation of a Jewish and a Palestinian state in two. It would carry out the provisions of resolutions 242 and 338, which have been a constant source of controversy over the past 22 years. 3. It would comply with the resolutions 242 and 338 on the need for a just solution to the Palestinian refugee problem. 4. It would remove from the annual UN agenda the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which has been the source of more contention, acrimony, and divisiveness than any other issue in the history of the UN. 5. It would abolish the ever-present threat of a nuclear war in the Middle East, an important duty of the UN, in fulfilling its primary responsibility for keeping the peace of the world. D. The Palestinians of the West Bank and Gaza. The plan would, at last, satisfy the Palestinian nationalist movement for self-determination, and give the Palestinian people the homeland and state promised to them by the UN partition resolution in 1947. E. The friendly Arab countries Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the Arab Emirates, Kuwait and Jordan should provide strong support for the plan, since it would remove their greatest fear, a new war in the Middle East, which might not only destroy all of the progress they have achieved in the past 25 years, but reduce their nations to ruins. F. Our European and Asian allies. The plan should receive near unanimous approval. It eliminates one of the few, and perhaps only, major issues which separates the US from its allies. It would restore respect for the US where it has been lost, and enhance the US role of leadership that our allies can only applaud. It would also eliminate one of the greatest fears of our allies, the interruption or loss of critical oil supplies from the Middle East, which would inevitably result from a Middle East war. G. The Palestinian Liberation Organization, by electing Yasser Arafat president of the State of Palestine, and according him an opportunity by diplomatic means to have the State of Palestine accepted, the radical element in the PLO, have already decided to follow Arafat if he succeeds in making peace and the recognition of a Palestinian state. The adoption of the plan would be a clear success, and should receive the wholehearted support of all element of the PLO. H. The American Jewish community. The response should be highly favorable to the plan. The great sacrifices made by American Jews to keep Israel alive in the face of the ever-present fears and anxieties that Israel may not survive another war, or a war after that, will have been justified. The assurance that Israel will survive and be given an opportunity to fulfill its destiny should be a source of great satisfaction to the American Jewish community and the Jewish people worldwide. The American Jewish community for the first time is experiencing serious divisions and open dissension on the question of supporting the Likud's policies in the occupied territories. A news item published in the November 25, 1989, issue of the Jerusalem Post reports that U.S. community leaders are now ready to oppose Israeli political differences in Israel, have spilled over into the American Jewish community, resulting in a much greater readiness on the part of American English Ike and Jerry to oppose Israeli policies publicly. This was evident in the mood among the 3,000 local and national Jewish leaders attending the General Assembly of the Council of Jewish Federations last week. Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir received a polite, but restrained reception, when he addressed the conference. The Jewish leaders here were clearly divided over Shamir's refusal to exchange land for peace, and they did not accord him prolonged out. They certainly gave him the appropriate standing ovations, and interrupted his speech a dozen times with applause. But there was widespread disappointment in what was regarded as a very hard-line speech. Shamir spoke shortly after he received a letter from 41 prominent American Jewish leaders asking him not to misread the polite applause of the audience as evidence that American Jerry supports his determination to hold on to the territories and to resist efforts by the Bush administration to bring about Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. Among those signing the letter were Hyman Bookbinder of the American Jewish Committee, Edward Sanders of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, Ted Mann, a former chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, Morton Mandel, former president of the Council of Jewish Federations, and Peggy Tishman, immediate past president of the Yuja Federation of Batsima Reich. The current chairman of the President's Conference strongly disagreed with those signing the letter. "I've been traveling around the U.S., he told the Jerusalem Post, "and the American Jewish community is solidly behind the Prime Minister. We want to give him a chance to wage peace his way." There's no break. Reich dismissed the letter as the work of a few individuals who are out of sync with the Jewish mainstream. Another letter received by Shammi during his visit was from 213 leading Reform and conservative rabbis calling on him to accept the principle of exchanging land for peace. Several hundred Jews also signed an open letter to the premier, written by Michael Lerner, editor of Tikkun magazine, urging talks with the PLO and recognition of Palestinian self-determination. Since these divisions in the American Jewish community are based primarily on differing views as to the best way to protect Israel's security, the proposed plan should be welcomed by both factions, since it assures Israel's security. With this source of contention removed, the plan would act to reunite American Jews in the service of Israel. Either Soviet Union in the present international climate, where the Soviet Union is struggling with serious internal problems and the Warsaw Pact nations are in a state of turmoil, the last thing the Soviets should be interested in is undertaking destabilizing activities in the Middle East, or fomenting any problems in the area. In the process of expanding its diplomacy toward developing better relations with all nations of the world, particularly the US, the proposed plan should receive at least mild approval. As earlier noted, the Soviet Union has complained of Israel's long-range nuclear missile capability. It is, therefore, possible that the proposed plan might well be received enthusiastically. J. The Palestinian refugees. It is impossible, from a practical standpoint, to restore to the Palestinian refugees the homes and lands from which they fled in 1948 and have now been incorporated into Israel proper. While the emotional and physical suffering of the refugees cannot be compensated for, the United Nations Resolutions 242 and 338 imply that justice is required only in the form of monetary compensation. Most realistic refugees recognize that this is their only hope, and have indicated a willingness to accept just compensation in lieu of the right to return to their homes and lands in Israel. The hardline Arab countries, although Syria, Iraq, and Libya can be considered parties in interest, what their responses would be is conjectural, and is not significant in determining whether or not the proposed plan should be adopted. However, it would not be surprising if Syria and Iraq were strong supporters, since it would remove the threat of the religious radicals in Israel to expand its borders to include the conquest of Syria and Iraq as part of Greater Israel. Elder dissenters. There is, of course, one group in Israel which would be opposed to the plan or any other peace plan. These are the Gush Emunim and other religious nationalist extremists, including the West Bank settlers. Their opposition would be highly vocal, and, as we have discussed in detail, is based on the argument, real or pretended, that the West Bank and Gaza are sacred lands of Eretz Israel which, according to the Torah, cannot be returned. The Israeli settlers in the occupied territories number about 70,000 people. The plan, as proposed, would give them the choice of continuing to live in their present homes in the occupied territories under Palestinian sovereignty, or selling their property and moving elsewhere. While the welfare and survival of Israel and the peace of the world far outweigh the beliefs and comforts of this small minority, the degree of deprivation or sacrifice required of the West Bank settlers under the proposed plan should be analyzed objectively rather than emotionally. In this analysis, the following factors should be considered. 1. As to the settlers, they occupy subsidized homes, most of them less than 10 years old. There are no family or generational traditions connected with these habitations. There is, in a word, no uprooting involved too. Most of these settlements are not what Americans would think of as pioneer homesteads, where a man is resting a livelihood.